Hello, and a very warm welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM. My name is Mike Fletcher.
And I'm Paul Cook. And together we'll be diving into the world of events professionals and interviewing key figures to unearth new thinking, new ideas, and up-to-date advice for industry newcomers.
New in Events is for everyone working in the meetings, incentive, conference, and event sectors. You may have recently got a job in this industry and you're looking to learn from more experienced players, or you may be a seasoned pro looking for new solutions, new ways of working, and inspiration for how your events can evolve for the future.
Whichever part of the events industry you work in, and no matter how long you've been one of us, you've come to the right place.
New episodes of Season 1 will be available throughout the first half of 2024, so don't forget to follow and subscribe on whichever channel you download your podcast from.
Or you can follow us and IBTM Events on social media, and we'll let you know every time a new episode is published.
So, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of New in Events, a podcast by IBTM. On today's episode, we'll be talking about sustainability, the events industry's road to net zero, and that all-important topic of climate change. So, Paul, who's on the show today?
Well, Mike, today we have two guests. We have Kai Haddendorf, who is a Managing Director and CEO of UFI, which is the Global Association of the Exhibition Industry. And more importantly for this conversation, he's a board member of the Joint Meetings Industry Council, otherwise known as JMIC. But before Kai, Shauna McKinley is going to be joining us. Now, Shauna is an educator and a consultant from Canada, who has worked in the event sustainability field for the last 25 years. She helps companies wrap their arms around their environmental impact, anything from carbon management, waste recycling, sustainable supply chains are all in her kit bag. So let's crack on and hear what she has to say. Welcome, Shauna, to this episode, which is all about sustainability. And what I'd like to do is just ask you about the new report that you've been working on into how extreme weather is impacting events. And I'd like to know, how do you even go about finding the data? And is it easy to obtain from people?
It's really interesting. I started this project because I had experienced a series of back-to-back extreme weather events where I live in Western Canada. We had back-to-back heat dome, heat wave, flood, wildfire events that had happened. So when I set out to do this, I started in my own backyard, and it was a media monitoring project. So I developed this habit of once a week, sometimes once a day, just checking in on my local news outlets and keeping track of events that were being disrupted by these different types of weather activities. And not to use a weather pun, but it snowballed from there. And it became this thing where you see one event and then suddenly an event is happening in another province, another country, another state, and it grew. And it started really just as media monitoring. So I was keeping tabs on the types of weather events, types of events that were being impacted, where they were, and how they were being disrupted. So recording things like, were these full cancellations, partial cancellations? Was it a situation where nothing was being relocated or rescheduled, but the program was adjusted? Just to try and wrap my arms around the scale and the nature of impact, because I was feeling like we were getting re-shocked by these different weather events. You would hear anecdotal case studies from your peers about, did you hear about this event or that event that was impacted? But no one was documenting things to give us a sense of scale.
So how many events did you end up documenting? How many events were disrupted in 2023?
So in Canada, we had 72 different unique events. And when I say unique events, what I mean is some of these events were actually series. We count them as one event, but they may have had, for example, one festival event that we counted actually had 10 individual concerts, nightly concerts that were disrupted. So if we added all of the series into the sample, it would tally up to 99 different events. And they occurred in virtually every province and territory across the country, with the exception of two or three. So this is something that is, in fact, countrywide in our case. And this year, wildfires was the major issue. 74% of events that we documented were impacted by wildfire and smoke. It's been common in the past. We saw that in 2017 and 2018, but it's not necessarily been the dominant issue in other years.
It was quite common across Europe last summer as well, wasn't it? But I don't think wildfire and smoke has had a significant impact on the UK, especially with our weather system. But I think organisers have always felt that weather is a manageable risk in isolation. Do you feel that things have worsened due to other macro factors, or is it climate as a whole?
If I look at the interviews that we did, because we did a media monitoring study, and then I reached out to every event that was in our sample, and I asked organizers if they'd be willing to talk to me about their detailed experience. And I asked them that question, do you feel this is something that's manageable? You've always dealt with it. Is it a risk that's changing in any way? And virtually across the board, every organizer indicated that it was leading to increasing uncertainty across the event as a whole. So we had situations with some of the organizers we interviewed where in the Okanagan region of British Columbia, it's one of the areas of our province that's been very heavily impacted by both heat and wildfire. 8 of the last 8 years, they've had events disrupted by either public health orders or wildfires, heat, and flooding. So if you imagine that as an event organizer, that year after year, you're dealing with those issues, it becomes this really compounding strain. Is it the only issue that they're dealing with? No, but it's one that's really escalating the uncertainty that they feel and a lot of the stressors that I think are leading to a lot of people to maybe evaluate their place in this industry and the role that they have.
So what are some of the financial consequences then caused by weather events, and how has this impacted? And what should planners do to be better prepared?
So we asked organizers, so in the media monitoring project, we could capture some financial data, but as you can imagine, not everyone is willing to share that information in a complete fashion. So we were able to collect some information. Now, some of it looks at the losses in terms of the economic impact of those events. So if we look at events like some of the major sporting marathons, some of the major festivals, the losses are in the neighborhood of millions of dollars to the communities that host these events. The other types of losses that we would talk to event organizers about was their actual budgetary impact. And while we don't have enough to be able to make broad conclusions about the financial effects of extreme weather, for most organizers, it was in the six figures, and it represented anywhere between 10 to 50% of their operating budget for that year, the losses that they were experiencing. And the really unsettling thing is, particularly in the case of wildfire, there's not insurance in place that will cover those losses. So, I mean, that's one of, I think, the biggest takeaways is as we experience more extreme weather disruption that sometimes can be excluded from policies in certain locations, my biggest advice is every event organizer needs to be more conscious of their coverages, what's in place, what they're eligible for, and what it would take to actually submit a claim, and also to be aware of their contract clauses as well. Things like force majeure clauses. The situation is such that where you have a very general clause, it really sort of takes the shutdown of an entire city for you to be able to action those clauses. But in the case of some of the weather we're experiencing, it's a disruption due to smoke that doesn't shut down a whole city. There's not a public health order. It's not a hurricane that's impacted all the transportation infrastructure. So that is a tool that, if you haven't designed that clause well, it doesn't necessarily serve you well in that situation. So I would really encourage event organizers to get professional advice on both of those two things specifically as a starting point.
Taking me back in time to when I used to work in that sector, in the good old insurance sector some years ago, we were always saying to people, look at the small print, look at what the coverage is. And I found that some planners just didn't want to look at it. They didn't want to have to look at something going wrong. I think now that we're in a position where we can't ignore that, or we have to consider these things.
I completely agree. I mean, the interview, we had 19 event organizers who were interviewed in this sample. One of them had coverage that they were able to initiate a claim for, and the success of their claim was based on pretty substantial efforts that they had to take in order to reschedule or host their event at another time in order to be able to acquire some compensation for that. But universally, everyone else wasn't covered. That's really critical to take a look at.
Yeah, especially now in terms of climate change and the worsening climate impact around the world.
Indeed. I think one of the things I found most moving about the interviews that I did is the loss of community impact and legacy, and also just the impact on the well-being of organizers themselves. There were a few events. The Canadian Table Tennis Championships is one that stands out for me, which I know is a bit of a random, strange event, but it's one that for the first time was being hosted in Canada's north in a community called Hay River, a really small community in the Northwest Territories. And if you can imagine bringing this national sporting competition into this tiny community, it has a big impact for people who are enthusiasts of the sport. I mean, you think of the long hours of winter. What can you do in the north? You can go indoors and you can play table tennis. We had some of the testimonials captured from the organizers that talked about the real excitement bringing this event to their community, not only as a way to celebrate the sport, but to actually create awareness around Indigenous culture and Indigenous involvement in the sport in the North. And the event had to be canceled due to a travel ban that resulted from wildfires, essentially shutting down a lot of the transportation networks to bring a lot of the competitors into the remote community. And it's probably the last chance that they'll have to host that event. They were impacted financially quite significantly, but what they speak about more so is the loss of that legacy to be able to profile the sport in their region and their region to the rest of the country. And that's really sad. And it speaks to the impact that events can have in these rural communities that I think are bearing a larger burden of the impact of extreme weather, because a lot of these events are outdoor events. They can take place in locations away from our big cities.
This is a great initiative that's in Canada right now. Are you looking to take this beyond Canada? Can other people from other countries get involved and help you so there's more of a kind of global view? Or is it purely going to be your country and that's where it stays?
The short answer is yes, very interested. And yes, folks can get involved. The first thing I should probably say is people should be aware that there are some efforts afoot on regional studies in certain sectors. So for example, in Australia, there is some research going on within the festival sector exploring a lot of these topics. I've heard of studies being launched in Europe, but I haven't actually seen some of the results of those come forward. I'm in contact with a lot of those people to try and see, can we coordinate more of a global presence so we understand the global impact on the industry across all types of different events? Because I think sometimes we tend to focus on the impact on a certain type of event, which dilutes some of the effectiveness I think we can have in acting on the issue. Interestingly enough, I told you earlier how this initiative snowballed. We actually have right now a database of over 820 events globally. This initial study is just focused on the 72 in Canada in 2023. But as an example, we have, I think about half our database right now is events within the US. We have events within Europe, but we've not consciously mined for that data in the way that we mined for it in Canada. So if anyone does have interest to explore a certain region or a certain type of event, we do have a template and a database that information can be easily added to, and it's as easy as getting in touch with me. And in particular, I will say we need a lot of help. This is a volunteer effort, and the research team is largely English-speaking right now. So assistance in areas of the world like Asia, Central, South America, Europe, where we have other languages that we can't effectively monitor media to be able to report the disruptions would be incredibly helpful. I keep updates on this project available on my blog at eventsselaney.com. And there is a contact form and actually a submission form for different events that people can use on that website. My email address is Shauna McKinley, my full name at gmail.com. So that works as well. But that form is there as an easy way to submit information and inquiries.
And obviously, it would be incredibly useful to have comparative data from one year to the next. I presume you're carrying out a similar study in Canada for 2024 as well, are you?
I am trying. The data that we have right now goes back as far as 2005, which for anyone who's curious, that was when Hurricane Katrina happened in New Orleans. So that's kind of become a bit of a marker for tracking the event data forward. But in Canada, we actually, and the study talks about how the numbers that we have do suggest an increase in events that are reported as disrupted. But one of the things we have to be really careful of is making an assumption that that means the number of disruptions are actually increasing, because I think there's probably an argument to be made that media is increasingly interested in this issue And that's causing more disclosures of things that probably have been happening beneath the surface for quite a long time. They've just never really been publicized. For me, one of the key things to take away is the importance of talking about this issue. I think right now we are talking a lot, and it's really good that we're talking a lot about how we're shoring up our own management practices to reduce environmental impacts so we're not contributing to climate change as much as we have in the past. That's great. And we also need to realize that we are at risk. And in some respects, there's a bit of a shade of COVID-19 here for me, because when COVID-19 hit, we were blindsided by it. And it was very damaging, very stressful, huge damage to the industry that we're still recovering from. When it comes to climate change, we have an on-ramp right now to be able to adapt and to prepare and to become more resilient. But that's not going to happen effectively until we realize there's a problem. It is a big scale problem, and it's happening now. And we have to talk to each other to share our wisdom in how to rise to the occasion to make ourselves more immune to the disruption that's happening and that's going to come at an increasing level. So this can take the form of connecting within our associations to have space to talk about how are we developing climate resilience and climate adaptation, you know, roundtables on things like risk management, communication strategies, sponsorship and contracting strategies to make sure that we're shoring up those things to make us more resilient are all ways in which we can learn lessons that help to keep our events healthy into the future.
A lot of people coming into the industry are a lot more carbon conscious these days, aren't they? A lot of Gen Zs coming in are a lot more conscious of their impact on the environment. And in the past, the events industry has been seen as a very wasteful industry. So what would you say to new people coming in with a more carbon conscious, climate conscious attitude?
For me, it's about three main things. If I look at the research that I've been doing lately, it's about making sure that we see climate as an aspect of risk management within our approach to operations. So I think that pre-professionals coming into the industry, first of all, need to be aware of risk management and contingency planning as a fundamental skill set. And they need to be connecting the dots to how the expectations around that process are connected to climate change. The second thing is diligence around our own management strategies, which I think is what you're talking about in terms of being carbon conscious, aware of what our carbon footprint is, what our levers are to dial down that carbon impact. And I know there's a lot of conversation about that in the industry, and there's so many more tools now that can help us than we certainly had when I got started. And then the third thing is thinking about how the experiences we create inspire people forward and keep them engaged in this issue so that they can make a positive impact and create a positive legacy in their own communities, whether that's back home in the towns where they live or in the associations where they work, in the sports clubs or anything like that. I mean, events have huge capacity to change the world in positive ways. So thinking about that from an experiential element, I think, is the third pillar for those pre-professionals to keep in mind.
Welcome back to the show floor. We're here at IBTM World in Barcelona. With me in our podcast booth, tucked away in the media center, is Kai Hattendorf, Managing Director and CEO of UFI, the Global Association of the Exhibition Industry, and importantly for this conversation, a board member of the Joint Meetings Industry Council. Hello, Kai. How are you?
Hello, Mike, and congratulations. You managed to say all of that alphabet soup rather well.
Thank you very much. So for anyone that may not be familiar with the JMIC, Kai, please give us a bit of background on the not-for-profit organisation and its focus on the Net Zero Carbon Events Initiative.
Happy to. I mean, JMIC is, as you said, the Joint Meetings Industry Council. So if you wish, it is the umbrella over all the industry associations that are active and serving the business event sector globally, from global players like UFI and ICA and ARPC to regional associations like CISO in the US or SASIOS in Singapore. And JMIC is then an association in itself, but it's clearly focusing not on duplicating work that its members are doing, but on providing the framework on two critical issues. One is industry advocacy, to make sure that we as an industry have a common narrative and a story to tell who we are when we talk to policymakers and governments around the world. And the other one is the big topic of decarbonization, for which Jamaica is facilitating and hosting the Net Zero Carbon Events Initiative, which we are presenting again here today at IBTM.
Yes, you're on the main stage later today, aren't you?
I think we've been upgraded. We were on a side stage last year.
Fantastic. You've got some big hitters as well with you on the main stage later. What will you be talking about? What's the panel discussion?
Well, you guys gave me some rock stars on that stage, and that's great. So Helen from RX is your sustainability lead there. Then the SEC in Glasgow, the host of the COP26, Kathleen Warden, who in a way got the whole ball rolling on net zero carbon events. And Tony from Taitra. Of course, Taiwan also is a shining example on sustainability policies and implementations from Asia. And we're going to tackle basically where we stand as an industry with the work around net zero and how we can progress really, really in the best and fastest way possible on the decarbonization of our industry. Frankly, the challenge we have is that as around the world, the climate keeps changing. We've been through an immense drought here in Spain. We've had record floodings in Oslo, where I now live. Construction sites in India, venues opened later than planned because it was so hot that the construction workers could not work. And we all know that shows have to be canceled and people can't attend because of weather. Climate change is already here, and that brings an ever bigger need to have frameworks and guidelines in place and regulations. And frankly, if we as an industry don't succeed in helping everyone understand that we are a part of the solution to the climate crisis, and if governments see us as part of the problem, they will regulate us. So we have this window where we can do what we can do best, look at an issue, come up with a solution and implement that, because ultimately we're all operations people in this industry. And we can show the way and lead the way ourselves on this most critical issue.
So how far has the roadmap gone to date? I think you presented it at COP26 in Glasgow, and now you've published some best practice guides. How far have you come, and what's some of the advice that you've got in those best practice guides?
We launched Net Zero 100 days out from COP26 2 years ago in Glasgow. And we had a roadmap initially, a plan where we would be 5 years down from there. Now we are a little more than 2 years on, and we are done with those 5 years of work. It's been amazing to see how the industry has rallied behind, how all the leading players from the ecosystem have endorsed this and are backing this. We now at, I think, 630 business event institutions from all around the world, from all the tribes of our big meetings industry who are supporting the initiative or have signed the pledge and implement the policies from more than 60 countries. And we have worked, you're right, in year one at Glasgow, we presented the pledge to say, here's what we want to achieve as an industry in line with the climate targets of the Paris Accord, this famous halving of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 and going net zero or zero carbon by 2050, the latest. And then 1 year on, last year at COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, we were presenting the roadmap to turn that what into a how. A year ago, we had sorted it into 8 buckets, if you wish, into 8 work streams. On venue energy, on production and waste, on food and food waste, on logistics, and on travel and accommodation. Those are 5 priority action areas that all define the footprint we have as an industry. And there are 3 additional work streams that are then about the measurement of the action, the carbon offsetting, while we reduce, we will still need to offset as a bridge, and the reporting, the also important reporting. If we say as an industry we want to have 50% of something, we need to measure and we need to report our progress. And if hundreds of businesses all around the world do that, we can track the whole industry in its decarbonization. These 8 buckets have been led by a different work group or work stream leader each, and some of them have been associations. Some of them have been major players from the industry. They all reach their finish line now that COP28 is upon us in the UAE. So every member of the industry will have access to the solutions for food and food waste, to the solutions for measurement, so that the industry can then take these as guidance and start implementing them as early as January 2024.
That's fantastic progress. And I assume anyone that hasn't signed the pledge can still sign it now. Where do people go to sign the pledge?
Well, you go to netzerocarbonevents.org. We have a website for that, which won't surprise you. You can find all of the material on the website. First of all, it is from the industry and for the industry. This has become the most inclusive and biggest ever collaboration we've seen in the event sector because it is meant to be a shared resource. This really is our industry's collective wisdom. So it's non-proprietary. You can access the materials without committing to being part of it because we want to make sure that everyone has that information. And frankly, because we work with the United Nations on this, they have their own ways and rules that they expect from players they participate with. There's no profit model here. We're not charging for accreditation. We're not selling certification. We are defining the answer of our industry to the climate challenge. And with that, we are de facto creating our own industry standard on how to respond to this.
Superb. And obviously, it's very important that we do this for climate conscious reasons, but also to attract new talent into the industry. This podcast is very much aimed at newcomers, new ideas, new strategic thinking. So tackling the climate problem is very appealing for bringing newcomers into an industry where they can be confident that we're doing our part.
Certainly, we ran a project at UFI last year where we picked a group of next generation leaders and we actually tasked them to write a new narrative why people should work in the events industry, in the exhibition industry. And they really challenged us to be more purpose-driven and to highlight things that we take for granted in our job because they are so special. There's no other industry where you can make a good career pretty much regardless of what you've learned. We always bemoan the fact that we fell into this industry. If you go across the show floor and talk to people, how did you get into the events industry? 8 out of 10 people will tell you exactly the sentence, well, I fell into it. And we are negative about that. We say, well, we should have university degrees and we should have more apprenticeship schemes. Frankly, this is one of our biggest assets. We are an industry where every color, every shape, every background, every profession that you've experienced in your life, you can put that to work and you can find a role in this industry and you can progress and be part of something bigger. A lot of the colleagues who are working in the work streams on these are not exhibition professionals per se. They came into the sector with a different qualification. I'm a business journalist. I've worked as a wedding photographer. Somehow it all qualified me to be in the events industry eventually. Your story will be a different one. And to someone listening to this podcast from outside the industry, great that you have interest. Do come on in. We need you. We need your skills. We need your view to help our industry become better.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We need people to come in with new ideas and to be confident that they're coming into an industry that isn't wasteful. It is climate conscious. It does have the resources to make the world a better place.
Indeed, everything we do is around building meeting places and marketplaces. And when it matters, that's what we learned in the pandemic, when it matters, people meet. The one day you may be involved in building a stage for a COP climate conference. Next week you may, whatever, be rigging U2 at the Sphere in Vegas. I don't know. It's all in the events industry. You create those spaces for people to have meaningful experiences. With every event you're involved in, you're changing people's lives and you're impacting people's lives. And I'm just always standing again in awe when I see a show floor, when I see the energy, when I see the connections that are happening and what comes out of them. And it's the best kept secret to be in this industry. We should go up to the rooftops on the top of the halls and shout it and say, come on in. We need talent. We need thoughts. We need to be challenged. And the future is bright. And the more we get challenged as an industry, the better we are.
You know what, Paul? It's April 2024, and I read in the news today that last month was the 10th hottest month in a row worldwide since records began. So it's vitally important that someone like Shauna is out there monitoring climate trends and doing this kind of analysis.
It certainly is, Mike. And I think that her work is invaluable, and the fact that it's open to other people to get involved in it and bring their experiences and their insights way beyond the Canada borders. It's just brilliant. As she said, the collective wisdom is a thing that's really making that project. That was also something that resonated because Kai said similar as well when we spoke to him about sustainability and what's going on his roadmap. So with the energy that's coming from people that are seeking to make a difference, and then other people are coming on board with that and getting involved, it can only make our events industry a much better space.
I totally agree. The Joint Meetings Industry Council has been very progressive in this area. They seem to have met all their targets set for 5 years in almost half the time, and they're moving the industry forward. And it's great, isn't it? Because this industry used to have such a reputation for being wasteful and not really considering the important climate debate. But now it seems to be lots of education, lots of good practice being put in place. We're moving in the right direction.
We certainly are. As well as the collective wisdom that is around the events industry, it was really interesting to hear Kai's perspective on people in the industry. And if they fell into it, is it a bad thing? Well, in his opinion, no, it's not. And I think he's got a really strong point there, in that if we're bringing in people from other industries, other experiences, other ages, then it can only help make everything that we do as a sector that much better, because we've got so much more in the way of knowledge and expertise that can go towards these projects and help make them become even more stronger and successful.
I totally agree. If we're going to attract the right talent into this industry, then we need to be flying the flag for what we can do to improve the global situation around climate change. Fantastic. Another thought-provoking episode with two fantastic guests that really know their subjects inside out, and some great insights and great advice.
Thanks so much for listening to New In Events, a podcast from IBTM. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Put November 19th to 21st in your diaries for IBTM World in Barcelona, and follow us on our social media channels for all the latest updates. Until next time.